I thought the story of the school is a perfect part to this Social Security exemption. The Social Security exemption and the parochial school movement did follow hand in hand at the same time, and yes, there was various people that spent time in jail because of the parochial school system where they refused to go to the higher education. So yes, we know several brethren's descendants that have done that. So I did pass those forms out. I'm going to try and cover some of the history, some of the reasons of the Social Security exemption. But definitely as the story talked about the school and thinking of the brotherhood as coming together to help each other, really that is what Social Security exemption stands on as well. It stands on the brotherhood, not on the government, for the Social Security exemption. So yeah, that is really a positive point, that it's a separation. The movement of Social Security taxes, insurance program as it was called back then, started in 1935 from President Roosevelt. He envisioned a system of the government that you could voluntarily be part of. But that changed as time went along. 1950 came along, President Truman signed it into law that it was compulsory. You had to pay Social Security tax. And that is when the movement of the exemption started strongly. When you, as brethren from the Amish churches and the Mennonite churches, went to government, to Washington, made visits, spent their time in talking to them, pleading with them. And if you think about some of their compelling arguments were based off of the two-kingdom concept. Church and state is separate. Jesus said in John 18:36, "My kingdom is not of this world. We look for a kingdom to come." So that was the whole concept of where the Social Security exemptions start. And as you know, the conservative people and other people had a long-standing tradition of helping one another. It's pretty obvious when there was a barn raising, neighborhoods would get together and help. They would bear one another's burdens. Really the thought behind the reasons why they didn't want Social Security, why they didn't want the government taking it. They felt it would take away from the brotherhood of sharing one with another, of helping each other. And they felt that they should not pay for the taxes, the insurances, that the IRS was taking funds out of their accounts. So as it started becoming pressure from the government, you must comply, they started actually withdrawing money right out of people's accounts. They even sold people's houses to pay the Social Security tax. And there was a man by the name of Mr. Valentine, an Amishman out in western PA. He was farming with his horses, plowing, and one day the IRS came and they took his horses right away from the plow. They unhitched them and took them to the sale and sold them to pay his taxes. That created a disturbance in the community, the non-plain community. They did not think that was appropriate. They went to bat. They said, "This is wrong. You need to stop harassing the plain people." And that was the term that the non-plain people were using. And with that, it actually started creating some traction that the government started listening. So yeah, in 1962, 80 Amish leaders went down to Washington and they did door-to-door, went to 400 congressional offices and visited each one and stated their case, handed out a paperwork to state their case, and met with as many people as they could. And that gave traction. And I said 80 Amish leaders. Later I found that there were some Mennonite leaders along with that as well. And really, they were doing it for their faith, to keep the church and the state separate, so they could keep working for their own, taking care of their own, bearing one another's burdens. So in 1965, President Johnson signed in a Medicare Act. So not only was it Social Security, became the Medicare as well. And in 1965, along with that act, the Amish and the Mennonites and the Plain Circles were granted an exemption from Social Security tax. And that is the same exemption we're going to talk about today. Not a lot has changed. Some concept has changed, but it's still similar to what it was back in 1965. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. I'll give a little more history. Beginning in 1984, employees were required to now start taking tax off of their employees. Before, it was only for self-employed. And then that became a new burden. And again, the Plain people went to Washington and said, this isn't consistent for us to do that. It doesn't, for us to take off for employees. And so they were again granted an exemption for that 4 years later. One of the points of concern at the Amish Steering Committee, by that time they had an Amish Steering Committee to help work with the laws. When an exempt person works for a non-exempt person and pays Social Security, then a person may still feel entitled to the benefits. And that's still a problem they struggle with today. If you're exempt and you work for a non-exempt employer, you're required to pay the tax. And that's something they struggle with and have been trying ever since 1988 to change and haven't succeeded. I've been to Washington with them a couple times to work at that. Went to Ohio once to work with them. There was a senator out there that was like-minded, and he was starting to bring into the bill. And I guess the Lord saw fit that it wasn't the time for that, because he was killed in a motorcycle accident. And then that kind of fell apart. So there, we're working to get that going again. But it's interesting to note that exemption was in the proposed law, that when you work for an employer that's non-exempt, you'd also be exempt. That exemption was in the law, proposed law back in 1988. But for some reason, it got vetoed, line-itemed out at the last minute. Ain't sure why. The Social Security exemption actually helped another landslide case, such as Wisconsin versus Yoder. Many of you have heard of that term. And it was to decide, who does the child belong to, the parents or the state? And the issue was, Wisconsin at that point still did not allow parochial schools. They were requiring public school. And they were getting very dramatic about it and going. The Amish did have their parochial schools anyway, and they actually went to the parochial schools and picked up the school children and took them to public school. By force was their intention, but I guess the children all ran out the back door into the cornfield and they weren't able to be taken to the school. And this came into the public, and Yoder, who was not Amish, took it to court for and on behalf of the Amish. And it went the whole way up to the Supreme Court. And that really was to decide, does the child belong to the parents or does the school have jurisdiction over them? Chief Justice Warren Burger, who was the president or the head of the Supreme Court at that point, his collective opinion that he wrote, and I just pulled a sentence out of there. He states, the Amish are law-abiding productive members, and that Congress has granted exemption from Social Security tax, and they don't collect welfare or unemployment benefits. And so they use that as groundwork to grant the exemption of the Wisconsin Yoder. So I just thought that was interesting in my research, and I thought it was worthwhile to understand. And I asked the question, how would our Plain churches hold up to that statement today? I think some of the churches could need some sprucing on that. So thank you is where you try and take care of that. So the government was requiring health insurance back there a few years ago. And there you could also be exempt if you had a valid form 4029. So another hinge off the 4029 exempts. There was other ways to become exempt as well. And did you know you can go to Canada without a passport or a driver's license? All you need is your birth certificate and a form 4029. Yep. That is a legal way to get to Canada. Vice versa for them. They also have an exemption from something similar to Social Security. Form 4029 can also be used at some hospitals to get the Plain Community. It's your proof that you're part of the Plain Communities for some. There's not a lot around this area that do that. So I thought I'd share that as well. Before I flip to the back side, I have this book, and I have more copies along if some of you want them. I don't have enough for everybody. It's called Social Security Exemption, The Past and the Present. So if you like the history, there's a lot more in here. And it is written from the Geauga County, Ohio Amish, who wrote this book in an effort to help their young people to pass on the vision. So anyway, I have a few along. You may have them. They're free. And you may order more from them if you want. But it goes through a lot of the work that was done and what led up to it. Some of their letters that were written back and forth. Some of the letters from officials as well are in there. So that's just that. You may have some there. You may get them. So as you look at the history, it's a clear definition, I think, of what the Social Security exemption really was intended for. And I think that helps create a basis of how to use it today. On the second page there, on the back side of the first page, I listed some more of the Bible verses that were prevalent as the Amish felt a need for the Social Security exemption. I read it in Galatians 6:2, but 1 Timothy 5:8. But if any provide not for their own, especially those of their own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. And they felt that strongly in their heart, that if they don't take care of their own people and let the government do it, they're not doing their part as a Christian. 1 Peter 2:9. But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, and you should shew forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Being separate, being set apart, was their thought there. And they used that verse. And in Thessalonians 4, that you study to be quiet and do your own business, to work with your own hands as you're commanded, that you walk honestly towards them that are without, work honestly towards them that are without, and that ye may have lack of nothing. There again, it was a thought of working with your hands, helping those around you, not having the government give things to you, not having the entitlement, the entitlement that some people have in this world. You owe it to me. No, we owe it all to God. I have been young and now I'm old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken nor his seed begging bread. Another verse they use to root their confidence in Jesus Christ, that he will help us. No man can serve two masters, for either you'll hate the one and love the other, or else you'll hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Church and state, separate. We want to serve God, not those around about us. And in Psalms 118, it says, it's better to trust in the Lord than to put confidence in man. There again, we don't have to trust in the government's money. We trust in the brotherhood. We're the biblical way. And I wrote, as I went through the book, I wrote some of the comments that they use as they talk back and forth, as they wrote back and forth. We desire to care for our own people. We want to put our trust in God, not the government. We feel it's our religious obligation to help our people first and to help others to whom we can reach with our resources. We believe in paying our taxes and supporting our government, but we want to be a separate people and take care of our own people rather than relying on the government. Participation in the government would eventually undermine our century-old practice of mutual aid. And that was probably one of the strong points of what drove them, that thought pattern, that if we allow this, what's it going to do to the next generation? Today, we'll say, no, we don't want it. The next generation may say, well, I paid for it. Maybe I should take some. The next generation, I'm entitled to it. You better give it all. And that's the concept that we need to teach and keep on living. We believe in earning our living by working with our hands rather than relying on the government. And they did paraphrase President Lincoln's quote, "It is not right to eat bread earned by another man's sweat." So yeah, they used that comment as well. I found that interesting that they used someone else's comment. So I went through that, just giving you a backdrop, trying to get the thoughts of why we do what we do. Are we really feel that way? Do we really believe that way? I think I'll go over the Form 4029 just a little bit. And I think this is a community that is more versed in than some communities I've spoken at. Some communities are only looking to get back into this, and I was thankful to hear that that's not the case here. You're looking to strengthen what you have, not just to get started. Thank you. So in some of the issues arise with people that are just looking to get back into it. So that I think the underlying note there down at the what you're actually signing to, as a follower of an established teaching of the group, I am conscientiously opposed. So you need to be a member of a group that has teachings against government assistance. And then it narrows it down. I am conscientious opposed to accepting benefits of any public or private insurance. And it doesn't stop there. And some people feel, oh, we can't. What about liability? We're required to have liability. Well, that doesn't matter. You can have liability insurance. That's not what it's saying. This exemption is talking about death, life insurance, disability insurance, old age or retirement insurance, or makes payments towards the cost of Medicare, medical insurance. Those are the types of insurances that this Social Security exemption is saying, hey, if you don't want to be part of Social Security, which offers all those types of insurances, why do you want to have them on your own anyway? So you have to, if you sign off on this, you're also saying you're not going to accept them personally in your lives either. Because, yes, Social Security has all those components. And one of the questions that comes up sometimes, what about workers' comp? That's required. And, yes, it is. In the state of Pennsylvania, I think in every state in the Union, the United States of America, there is a requirement to have workers' comp. Some to different degrees, but various states have exemptions to them laws, and Pennsylvania is one of them. You can get exempt from it if your employer allows it. But if it doesn't, you're allowed to have workers' comp, because read the medical care insurance. It doesn't say you're opposed to medical insurance. You're opposed to the payments for the cost of medical care. And so if you're covered with workers' comp, it's not a problem with this. But when you draw on workers' comp, that's where it gets to be a conflict with this, if that makes any sense. And some people would say I'm wrong in that, and that's okay. Some people say, well, it's required, we can accept it. I would tend to say that's not what it's saying here. But so, yeah. Liability, fire insurance are really acceptable according to this, but there may be other reasons you wouldn't have it. So I thought I'd bring that point out. So as I said, you need to be an employer. I mean, you need to be self-employed. You can be exempt, not a problem. As an employee, you can be exempt if your employer is exempt. And if not, then you need to pay into the tax. Your employer needs to pay in too. But that's the way it is today. But that you can still be exempt. That's no problem with that. It's just the fact that when you go to collect, you shouldn't be collecting it then. And you need to be part of a religious group that teaches or encourages or practices brotherhood aid and encourages that we don't rely on the government. And the church itself actually has to get recognized by the government to be a church that does this. So there's another form that the church needs to fill out, send into the government. And that is one of my jobs that I do. I assist churches that do that. So if there's a new church that starts, they need to do it. If it's even within the same setting where you would have a full church and you would divide the church, the new church would need to get one as well. So yeah, that would be a form. It's not real difficult to get. It's just a matter of filling the form out, telling you who you are, and that, yes, we do this. And send it in. And it goes through. So security, I'm the Mennonite liaison. There's an Amish liaison, there's a Mennonite liaison. And so if Social Security has an issue with one, they will send a letter back to the people saying, hey, we have a problem with this. You can contact one of the liaisons to figure out how to move forward. Because they're not allowed to call me and tell me because of privacy issues, so they do it that way. Then those people can call me. And there's not a week goes by that some church from across the nation will give me a call. And we can give them some direction. And we're thankful that we can do that, that the government allows us to help those people. Because there's a need for that. It's not hard, but if it's not answered correctly, it doesn't work. So this form is a lot more simple. But this form does need to be filled out correctly with the religious group in the district because they are very scrutinizing on that, making sure. Because there is abuses to this system. Sad to say. So we work with a group from Texas. I believe that wanted the exemption because it was a tax savings, right? Well, yeah, as the government looked at it, they realized this group is not an eligible group. And so, yeah, they worked with and they denied them that. And the people took them to court saying that that's not fair. You give it to other people, why don't you give it to us? And through the conversations, they made it plain. These are the criteria that are allowed, and you don't fit those criteria. So it is fair, but you don't fit the criteria. And there's other abuses. And I mentioned the fact that, yeah, it saves taxes. That's not the reason you fill one of these out. Think about it before you fill one of these out. You fill a Social Security exemption out because you're opposed to accepting the benefits. That's why you fill it out. And really, it comes with a responsibility. You might say, oh, I thought it was an exemption. Yes, but it comes with a responsibility. You now hold yourself out as a person that's exempt, that feels that way, and now you have the responsibility to maintain that and live that. And not only that, you need to be part of a brotherhood, because we all know that as we get older, expenses for medical go up. And if you're not part of a brotherhood, it's kind of difficult. And that's really why Social Security was developed. If you think of it from the government side of the picture, you probably know of or heard of people that are in the community. I ran ambulance for a number of years, and I would get into places and we would say, is there no one to call to help you? No. Nobody. No one lives in the area. I don't know anyone. Nobody to help. That's what Social Security was designed for. To help those people that have nobody. Their family disowned them. Yeah. So we need the brotherhood. So looking at it from the government's point, yeah, I can see where they're coming from. But thankfully, we have each other. And as I was getting to the point of, as you get older, it takes money. So if the brotherhoods of like-minded that they would share everything, that's good. But there's been a lot of encouragement that when you, I'll use the term save Social Security tax, that's really not the proper term, but when you don't have to pay the Social Security tax, that you would have a responsibility to give more to the church or put some aside for when you're older or both. So that when you're older, you can help take care of some of your needs. But the church, that's what the church is for. So if you help the church. So there's a responsibility to save for some future time when God doesn't allow you to work. And to give more to the church. Because it takes more. So we need to think about that. And that's okay. I think that's appropriate. I think that's what the brotherhood's for. We can make that work. I lost my train of thought, so that's all right. I'm doing it. So back in 1987, Mr. Schuller, the Speaker of the House, wrote, "Congress exempted the Social Security self-employment tax and those individuals who belong to religious sects opposed to public insurance, who make provision for the care of their dependent members or their members that ain't able to work and take care of themselves." Today, Savin and my colleagues and I are reintroducing legislation to further exempt employees of identical faith to employers already exempt under 1965. So he felt that was his need to do that, and they did that. So I just thought it was interesting how people in the government that God sets up and takes down were there for such a time as that to help that happen. I would take some questions now if anyone has some. Maybe you don't have any questions. The most times that a group would not be exempted is because of the lack of brotherhood or the lack of sharing among the brotherhood is one of the reasons. And the second most reason would be the lack of proper teaching among the brotherhood. It's pretty broad, but yeah. So down that line, there's been some churches denied their exemption that were exempt because they abused their exemption. So in one case, the minister, a bishop, I'm sure which, of the congregation who was exempt, wrote to the IRS or Social Security and said, "I no longer want to be exempt. I want to annul my exemption." And that's a privilege you could do. And they're like, "So you're teaching your people to be exempt, but you're not exempt, and you want to annul it? I think we'll just do that for you, and then we'll also cancel the church's exemption." And that's what they did. And the church went on through that. That wasn't the way the church actually felt, but for some reason the minister felt that way. And the church went back to the government and said, "We as the church body don't feel that way." And they did reinstate it for the church, but the minister couldn't sign anymore. Actually, I think he was no longer part of that group after that. So yeah, they do things like that.
Thanks for that question. Jogged my memory on that one. Did that answer your question? Any other questions?
You mentioned business and retirement insurance. Is that the same as retirement plans, like IRAs?
Good question. So retirement insurance and retirement IRAs or retirement plans are not the same. A retirement IRA or a retirement plan is your own money put into a savings that the government has some control that says you need to keep that in that account until you're 65. So, yeah, and a retirement insurance is where you're actually paying in to an insurance such as Social Security or something else. And once you retire, you would get some money back. Now, some pensions would have that same characteristics, and that could be a problem for an exempt person, yes. Some pensions will have an insurance, retirement insurance policy right on with it that once the money gets all, the insurance will kick in and will pay you for the rest of your life. So that is an insurance, and that is in conflict with the 4029. But if it's strictly a pension where it's only your money, that's okay. But where they have the insurance rider attached to that, that if you live beyond their expected lifespan, then the insurance would pay out for the rest of your life. Did that answer your question? Good. Go ahead.
There's a line on here that says, I agree to notify the Internal Revenue Service within 6 days of any occurrence that results in my no longer being a member of the religious group described above or no longer following the established teaching of this group. Wondering, it does get an or there. It says, I got my exemption not from this church, but got my exemption for another church years ago. And according to this, it would almost suggest that it would nullify that. Is that what this is saying? Or, and if it is there, working to change that word?
So, that is what it says, but in IRS comes out with their practice manuals, and in there it says that if you go to a church that is also exempt, you don't have to do this. So you don't have to know and redo it. But you may send in another Form 429 and attach your old one to it with the new church information on, and they'll process that and send you a new form out. So you never annulled it, you just put the new church information on. Or the old one's good too, as long as you continue that practice and have it be a church member. Now there is, you would say, some time maybe between when you're transferring churches. That's okay, as long as the intent is there to be a church member and you're working at that process. Also, the Social Security office would also say that if a member was excommunicated, is no longer a member because of some sin in their life, but they're actively trying to come back to the church and make amends with the church for that sin and remove it from their life, then they do not have to cancel their exemption either. But if they leave and aren't actively trying to come back, then they need to cancel their exemption. And the next question might be, well, what is I as a minister who signed it? No, it's not your responsibility. It's their responsibility. Yeah. So, yeah, your responsibility is accepting them in and saying yes, but it's their responsibility to say, I've left the church. I don't qualify. Did I answer your question in the various avenues? Social Security actually realizes what happens in a church. There's a new man there now. His Bill, he's been there for a few years. Bill Hildebrand, and he struggles to understand the plain community way of life. And why would that be? And I struggled to try and explain that to him. But sometimes it's a little hard. Sometimes it's like, yeah, I know you're right, but you know, that's the way the plain people do it.
One of the things, the biggest things he has a problem with is, can't your people ever get along? You're always splitting churches. And that's sad. I can't explain that one. There is no biblical explanation for that one. Maybe there is, pride. So, yeah. I seen a hand go up in the back there. Go ahead. So, I'm trying to think an example of a private insurance, but there is private insurances out there. So there was a church down in Chester County a number of years ago from the Lancaster Conference who had their own private insurance company. It wasn't an aid program. It was an insurance company. And it wasn't public. You had to be a member of the church to be part of that insurance company. So that's a private insurance. Sometimes there's large employers, mega employers, who have their own private insurance for medical or something. They're not... From private insurance, that's correct. Now, if the church has a alms fund, a sharing program, that is not insurance. Yeah. Go ahead.
So in the case of just hearing a question here, so you have a mortgage and then you get insurance, that would say if something would happen to you, we would pay off your loan. That would be included in that type of private insurance that we're saying that we are opposed to.
I think you answered the question. Yes, that is correct. It's life insurance, death insurance. Yeah. So that is actually a problem, according to the IRS, Social Security IRS. Yeah. Mortgage insurance that would pay out in the event of life or death. Yes. You can get mortgage insurance that pays out in the event of unable to work. That's disability. Same difference. So it creeps into a lot of areas. Back to the private insurance at an employer. An employer may have a health reimbursement account. That is not insurance. So they may have an insurance package, and that's what I'm talking about. There is a difference. So, yeah. Aid or reimbursement plans are not insurance. So you've got to separate them. The difference is, according to Social Security, is if you're paying into a program and guaranteed some benefits back, and they're probably making a profit on you. If it's an aid program where you give in when you can, you accept help when you need it, that's not insurance. No, if it's insurance, it's not okay. That's right. It's still insurance. Yeah. If they're doing a reimbursement of your expenses, that's different. That's just a bonus then. But if it's insurance, it would actually be a conflict. Go ahead. Would not. No, sharing plans are not insurance. Yeah. Right. They're not insurances. Yeah. And the government specifically understands because Christian healthcare is not required to pay you all your medical bills. They're just required to pay a little bit. And even that's optional if you read the fine print. But they're a sharing program, so they work. They do share. So if they don't have the money, the phrase is in there that they don't have to pay any. But if it's working as it should, it will have some. I was just thinking about more abuses. And it's sad to talk about these because they're really abuses of the system by the individual. So someone's exempt most of their life. They start working away. When they retire from whatever they were doing in the business or farm, start working away. They get in Social Security taken off. And that happens for 12 years. And they're like, hey, I can collect Social Security. Oh, no, I'm exempt. So they file the annulment, and then they can collect Social Security. Does that seem right? I think I'll let you answer that. It doesn't. They're taking advantage of the system. They reached entitlement. That is not what our forefathers would have intended when they were asking for the exemption. And that is exactly what they were scared about. Yeah, I think we finally figured out what the conflict was. I think we're about to pass it now. On that form, there was the thought pattern that someone could go to a larger sharing plan. And when they saw the word plan, they said insurance. And they said, no, you can't do it. And that stuck, even though we've tried to work with it. But I think we finally got them to understand what the sharing plan is that we're talking about. And they're like, oh, yeah, that is an insurance. Yeah.
So are you saying that would be that, it was just making that room for someone if they wanted to be a part of like Samaritan?
That's right, yeah, allowing someone to be part of Samaritan Ministries or Christian Healthcare. And they saw the word sharing plan, and they said, plan? That's insurance. Nope, don't qualify. And it took a long time until we get the responses back. So I figured out what their problem was, and then to explain it became the next problem. And I think with the last email with them, I think we got that. So I think we're finally there. Thanks for bringing that up. Kenneth. A little bit. But not really, because we all think similar in the biblical standpoint, yeah.
The other question, how does the government look at when you start going into, you know, you get money, government money from an orphanage and all this kind of thing? How do they do that?
Good question. So government subsidizing programs of some sort. According to the Social Security exemption, it's okay. By the letter of the law, it's okay. But if you heard me talk about the history and what we wanted to do, I have to wonder if that's what was intended. I don't think so. But so yeah, by the letter of the law, it's okay. But in the theory behind it, the understanding behind it, I ain't sure that it fits what the program was intended for. I guess that becomes everyone's interpretation, because I can't tell you it's not allowed. But I can try and tell you that, yeah, that wasn't what they were intending. Good question, though. With no right answer in my mind. So tax credits, like a child tax credit, maybe number one? Yeah, that is different. Is viewed differently by the government and by our people. Tax credit is the same as any other legal deduction that you can take on your income taxes. Yeah. So it's slightly different. I should broaden out from that one. It's a reduction of taxes. I think the Old Deuteronomy Steering Committee would go beyond that and say that if it's a payout, and I would feel that way myself, where you've brought your taxes to zero and they're going to give you a $10,000 check, that probably is still the same as a government subsidy because they're actually paying you money. So again, it's not against the law. It's probably not the intent of the law, of the exemption, people that got the exemption. That's one, again, that I feel there should be a clear answer. And the Amish have been working with Social Security to try and get that changed, but they haven't at this point. That it is clear that, no, that doesn't qualify. Are there any other questions there? If you lose the exemption form, and I should have brought a form along, there is a form to request from Social Security office to get a copy. So yes, maybe I can try and get you a copy.
I've already just called down there and told them they sent one out with that data.
Yeah, that's possible to do as well. Call down in to Social Security office, and they'll send one out. But they won't. It's getting to be more and more of a difficulty for me to call and do it anymore. It needs to be the person that's actually lost anymore. This privacy issue is affecting every level of government.
So yeah,
there is a form to do. Yeah, in case she ain't available. That's correct. And it wouldn't be the first person who filed their Social Security exemption and they can't find a copy. The fact is they never got a copy back because it never reached Social Security office, maybe. And they don't have you as exempt. So what do you do in a case like that? Just file the exemption and move forward. Yep. So they say your intention was to be exempt. It's amazing how lenient they can be. You were intending to be exempt. You did the proper steps. The government lost your mail. It's not your fault. Yeah, that's really what they're saying. So, yeah, there is a way to get that copy. And it is good to have a copy on file. Just because it is a valuable copy. If you need that for some reason. Any other questions, thoughts, comments, corrections?
So we're still signing on a charity ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, they're really not like that anymore. How does that work?
At this point, the government is still okay with it. Yeah, I've talked to him about that, and he's like, yeah, you're trying, and I understand. Yeah, now that he's understood where we're at. So, yeah. Yep. Yes, that's what we're actually trying to do. Oh, all the forms that are filed. It's not required. It's only a personal, if you want one. Yeah.
Just because it disintegrated doesn't mean.
Correct. And you transferred your membership to another church. That's fine. Yes. Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure to speak here. And Phil, that was worthwhile. Thank you for all your efforts. And we'll continue to travel the path forward. And yes, try and live it and follow it to the best of your ability and knowledge. So thank you all. I'll turn it back to whoever's going to finish.